Wait for it, wait for it, and we're live. Hey, all you crazy sci-fi and fantasy fans, it's time for your daily dose of shenanigans over here at the Blasters and Blades podcast. Just a couple of nerdy veterans geeking out over our science fiction passions and fantastical fantasies. A place where magic is king, the sky is the limit, and space is the place. We are the podcast that puts the fun in dysfunction. So without further ado, I have to tell you, unfortunately, Stabby and Nick couldn't make it today. We did not check, all three of us, the movie. We just figured, we'll watch it before the show. We're good to go. It'll be fresh. And then we realized it was 3 hours and they ran out of time. So since they hadn't watched the movie, we're just going solo. And that'll be a lesson to us to check the time when we plan officially. And that's a note to you, dear listener. The movie we're talking about is, in fact, 3 hours long. So slot your time accordingly because you're going to get sucked in. So with that out of the way, we're going to let our guests introduce themselves. So I'm going to go in alphabetical order as determined by the great oracle known as Word Documents. And Adam, A.M. Stevens, can you go and tell us who you are?
Adam?
Bueller.
Adam. Beautiful. No, we lost him.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Hello, that's me. I'm Adam Stevens.
All right. Short, sweet, to the point. All right, Jonathan, can you introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers?
Yeah, I'm Jonathan Watson. I write a lot of short stories, working on my novel right now. Love nerdy things, video games, fantasy, books, anime, sci-fi stuff. All that good, sweet, and beautiful nectar of the gods.
Do you have a preferred genre yet?
For writing or for reading?
For writing, yeah, for your writing.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan, or I really enjoy writing sort of near future absurdist fiction, you know? So kind of like, what's a good example? I guess kind of like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So kind of sci-fi side, but things are just crazy.
You do inject quite a bit of silly.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's room for that in the market. It's a niche that might be harder to sell, but I think once people get onto it, they tend to love it. So very bold of you, Cotton. We'll see how it works out. So what about you, Matt? Can you introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers and tell us how to pronounce your last name so I don't butcher it again?
Sure. Yeah. My name is Matt O'Larinot. I am also filling in, I guess, for Nick as a veteran of the U.S. Army. I did 5 years active duty between 14 and 19 and was a Arabic linguist. So went to the Defense Language Institute, did all that good stuff, shoved Arabic into my head over the course of a year, and then got stationed in Fort Riley, Kansas. So the Army really knows how to spend their money.
So first, we want you to know, dear listener, that he wasn't 14 when he enlisted. It was 2014. They don't take child soldiers. The rumors are not true. I don't care how desperate they are right now in the recruiting office.
Yeah, despite how small some of my cohorts were. That said, I am currently still in the U.S. Army Reserve in a different role, and I am also a writer of weird science fiction and fantasy, just kind of bouncing between the two. I've contributed to some of JR's great anthologies, such as the Santa anthology, Sleigh Bells Ring, The Monster Within, and another one upcoming for The Contested Landing, hosted by Three Ravens. And I'm shopping around a manuscript at the moment, so off we go.
Nice. So the Army thing, when you say they were short, are we talking like midget level short? Because I've seen some short people in the military or just not tall.
Shortest person I think I saw was like 5 foot flat. She was a little National Guards woman from Minnesota.
Okay. So yeah. When I went to AIT the second time, because I had three MOSs, I was a watercraft operator. So when they teach you damage control, they put us on the USS Buttercup, which is basically like a PT boat in a swimming pool. So they can, you know, teach you how to stop a ship from sinking in a controlled manner, of course. And that was our rule, was that when it got to the shoulders of your shortest person, you lost. And unfortunately, I had twin sisters in my damage control locker that were 5 foot even. So we were at a severe disadvantage because all the tall guys got stuck together in more time. But that did teach me
shoulders.
Yeah, that did teach me the valuable lesson that if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And I was able to find the valves, because if you trace it back where the leaks are coming from, and I'm putting leaks in air quotes, if you track it back to the source, meaning where the control people are doing it, not where we're supposed to be doing it for the scenario, you can shut it off and miraculously the thing starts draining and they couldn't figure out how we knew.
Hey, yep. Good stuff.
Yeah. One of the guys on the team got lost on the way to the head, the bathroom, latrine, whatever. And there was a map on the instructor's wall that he found that traced all of it. So he took a picture. His mind, because we didn't have cell phones back then, not like we do now, smartphones. But he like had a mental picture of it, and we were able to sketch it out enough that we could trick him.
Dope. Well, look at that intel gathering.
Yeah. Got to be 10% smarter in your equipment is the rule.
Well, so we didn't think to call it intel gathering when we got caught, because we did get caught, because let's face it, I mean, trainees, they we've done nothing they haven't seen a dozen times before. So we didn't come up with the good excuses to baffle them with bullshit, as they say.
I was definitely going to report this to the S2.
Yeah, so that's the trick they tell you in the Army. If you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with bullshit. And it's a good lesson in life, I think. It'll get you far. Basically, fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
So the next part of this introduction, dear listener, is where we first found this illiterate crew. And we're all in a writing group together, and they do a podcast as the Illiterate Bastards, otherwise known as Yet Another Writing Podcast. So since you guys graciously decided to sponsor this episode and you picked the movie we're reviewing, can you tell us a little bit about your podcast? And I will link to all of that in the show notes if you, dear listener, want to check it out.
Oh, yeah. So our podcast is known as Yet Another Writing Podcast. Our group of three here, Jonathan, myself, and Adam, are known as the Illiterate Bastards, as we introduce ourselves. And the podcast itself is aimed towards, like, by writers for writers is really our general thing. But for anybody, really, who wants to try and improve their storytelling or just follow us along, since we are all sort of junior writers coming into the industry just now within the past handful of years. And so it covers a lot of, like, we do some reviews here and there on books, and we do just lessons learned and writing exercises and things that we go over that we do in our actual physical writing group meeting, since we all meet in person every Saturday.
They don't meet in person with me for our writing check-in on Wednesdays. We just do it over Discord, or was it, I guess, Google Hangouts or something?
Yeah.
I click the linky button they give me. That's all I know. But we all that writing check-in group started with Robert Tilsley and the listeners of the Dead Robot Society podcast, which is another writing podcast, but they also just get nerdy in general. And these three found their way into the group. And so we've just been doing that for about, I guess, a year and a half now, where you guys have been coming.
Yeah, yeah. I think I found a little before then, as when I was ETSing from regular Army. I was like, man, like, I'm finally having time to myself, and I guess I'll go on Facebook and try and improve my writing. You know, we met.
Yeah, it's been fun, and that's how I got them into my anthologies. Before I was publishing them with Three Ravens, and we were doing myself, I could always guarantee submissions from these three. So that made it easy, because you knew at least 30,000 of your words were covered-ish. So with that being said, let's talk about the movie that brought us here. So first, we're going to be reviewing the movie, Three R's. Its official name is Rajram Ranamham Radhirham, and I butchered the hell out of that, and I know it, but it will be in the links if you want to try pronouncing it yourself for funsies. It is an Indian film, but it's not Bollywood, it's Tollywood. Apparently there's a difference. Never knew that. I guess I thought all Indian films from India were all generically considered Bollywood, but are you guys aware of that distinction, since you guys were talking about it in the pre-show?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, since India is such a large country with so many different languages, Telugu is one of those things, one of those languages that exists kind of on its own, and that's where this movie came from. So that's why we have the T for Tollywood.
Okay. So it is an Indian film, but before we show the trailer and we start talking about the movie, how did you guys hear about it? Because since you guys recommended it to us as an awesome movie.
I heard about it from Jonathan, who,
yeah,
for one movie night, had us all sit down and watch it, and it was amazing.
So how did
best
you find
3 hours
movie?
Of my life?
You know, just crawling around the interwebs, a bunch of when it came out, kind of like, you know, how The Room became a phenomenon and everyone was reviewing it on YouTube and things like that. When this came out, it was just as big as The Room, but for opposite reasons.
Yes, it's actually good.
I don't think I've ever heard of or seen The Room. Apparently, I don't get out much.
Oh, well, that's, like I said, it's the opposite experience, but it's so bad, it's good. Bad. Yeah. And in fact, James Franco made a film about the making of the disaster the room. Artist. Yeah. Yeah. And so we still haven't done this, but I kind of want to watch both of those movies back to back.
How long is they compare? Room?
Is it like another 3-hour production?
Oh, no, The Room's much, I think it just barely qualifies as feature length.
Yeah, so The Room, essentially, there was a guy going to film school, and he just really wanted to get this movie out, but no one would make it because it was a bad film. And so he was like, screw it, I'll make it myself. So he and all his friends just make a movie.
Yeah. And his name is Tommy Wiseau, by the way, and he's actually just an interesting person to read about. If you look at his wiki, like, he doesn't actually know his own birthday, so it's all estimated.
How do you not know your own birthday?
I think he was born in Eastern Europe sometime, and so they lost the records, and by the time he was conscious enough to request them, they just didn't know.
Oh. Do they at least, like, know a generic year? That's crazy to think about.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, a lot of that stuff happened, like, with the Cold War especially, and you remember when the USSR was a thing. Like, not very many people had good records, and so people coming out of Romania and other, like, those other Eastern European Warsaw Pact countries, sometimes there just weren't records. And it's like, estimated, I think you were born in 75, I guess.
Yeah.
Interesting. That baffles my American mind, but I will hit the I believe button, and we will carry on. So before we show the trailer, I'm going to read you the summary. So the movie 3 Hours is set during the British era. Molly, a small tribal girl, is taken by the British governor Scott Buxton and his wife Catherine against the wishes of her mother. Rama Raju is an Indian cop who works for the British Army. For him, duty comes first, and he is very ruthless to revolutionary Indians, but is never given his due by British government. The British government find that a tribal Kamarama, Behem, who considers Molly his sister, has started his search for her and could be an obstacle for the British. So basically it's a, what's that movie where the guy found, I have one very unique skill set and you're going to regret.
Oh, Taken.
Yeah.
It's sort of that vibe with the movie. And it's definitely interesting. It's basically two characters sort of poised against each other in an epic showdown with dancing.
And they're also best friends.
They do become best friends. So do you agree with that generic summary that we shamelessly stole from the Wikipedia?
Yeah.
Okay. So, dear listener, when we start reviewing the movie, we're going to talk about the blurb from or summary, which we just gave. Obviously, we're going to show you the movie trailer, talk about the characters, the plot, the world building, cinematography, since it's a movie that matters. The movie poster will show that, and we'll talk about overall. So real quick, before we get started, I'm going to talk about the details. So obviously, the movie is 3 Rs. It was directed by S.S. Rajamouli. Does anybody else pronounce the Indian better than I am? Because I feel bad for butchering it. But
Just do it with confidence.
Fake it till you make it. All right. So what I will say is that for all I can't pronounce their names, the movie was amazing and I didn't care. So this movie cost $69 million U.S. to make. I watched it for my $9.99 American monthly Netflix subscription, because it's one of the included movies, so it's kind of built in your subscription. I think you could probably buy it on Amazon. I didn't look because, like I said, it was in Netflix. It's approximately 3 hours long. It's exactly 182 minutes, so it'll take a little bit of time to watch it, but it's totally worth it. And it was released in March on the 25th in 2022, so it is a relatively new-ish movie. And the ad copy describes it as an adventurous, a fictitious story about two legendary revolutionaries and their journey away from home before they started fighting for their country in the 1920s. So does that ad copy work for you guys?
Yeah. Because I believe Kamran Bheem and Rama Raju were real people. But in this one, it's the fictionalized versions of themselves as basically superheroes.
Yeah, I liked it too. I thought that was pretty good. What about you, Adam? I didn't know if you was... Adam?
What did you think of the movie?
It was... Oh, I loved it. Refreshing to see something. Oh, the summary. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's about right.
Okay. Now we're going to show the movie trailer, and we're going to have to mute ourselves because we're sharing the screen. But, all right, if you could hit play for us, Jonathan.
All right.
All right, Jonathan, if you could unmute, if you have yourself muted, it looks like it's not going to show the sound. And if you could start it back for us.
Oh, look at me. I'm so good at this.
Nick normally does this part because when I do it, it freezes my setup.
Right. Okay, take two. Here we go.
Still no audio. So what we're going to do is, as you're looking at the screen, you can see some of the visuals from the movie. We're just going to rock through it and go. But as it keeps playing, it was very, wow, the scenery, the colors were vibrant. You definitely got the vibe of, you know, what you think about when you think about colonial era and
the British Raj,
like,
and also a guy fighting a tiger, because that's for the most important part.
Yeah, that was unexpected. He did not dance when he was fighting the tiger, though. So, I mean, there's that.
Yeah, just.
And this is Rama the cop.
Yeah, we were joking through our second watch through here that the only reason that they were able to instantly communicate and become best friends is that they were all jacked.
Yes.
Through the power of muscle, Mancy.
Yeah. Yeah. You work out, you can create a bond.
Yeah. Bromance is for the win. And they were very affectionate physically, but I think that's just a cultural thing because you don't tend to see that in the US as much, but it's not uncommon. I saw that a lot when I was in the Middle East.
Yeah. Like, two dudes holding hands as friends. It's like a regular thing.
Yeah. And this is that's the mom, but they just showed the girl behind the cage was Molly, who was the one that's captured. So, and this is showing what a badass the cop is. And if you're just listening, the scene's visually stunning. You should click the link to the show notes for the trailer. It is definitely worth it. And what I will say is the British, the red uniform with the khaki pants, like that was a sharp uniform.
It stirs the American in you to go ahead and open fire on them.
It does. Like, I did start wondering like what the range and distance was. And of course, this is the superhero, otherwise known as the governor of India.
Yeah, played by the late, great Ray Stevenson.
Yeah, this goes when he goes God mode, which was kind of cool. He never seemed to run out of arrows, which was cool. It's like the Rambo where he never runs out of bullets.
Oh, yeah. Got to bring back the spirit of the 80s.
Yeah, I was digging it. That's probably a good way to describe some of the Bollywood stuff. Is the spirit, or Tollywood, I guess. The spirit of the 80s when it comes to film.
Yeah.
But the 80s had some awesome movies, so I am not complaining. So are you liking the trailer, Jonathan? You can talk too.
Oh, what? The trailer's so loud, I can't hear you.
That's pretty funny. All right. So we will take that off the screen. And you could just close it. So you were hearing it. We weren't. Interesting. We'll have to look into that for next time.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the movie trailer? Obviously, we've all seen the movie, but would that have sold you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the part where the guy, where Beam grabs the motorcycle, picks it up, and then he's about to start using it as a club. I mean, boom, sold.
They had me at, he just roared back at the lion as it like scratched his chest and almost ate him. I'm like, dude, I got to know more.
Yeah. It's so cool. It's so cool. I feel like this is the atmosphere that comic book movies should have, the MCU, you know, where it's just, you know, crazy. We're going crazy and we don't care.
Yeah. And it wasn't like.
Go ahead.
Oh, it was just like, it's not unbelievable, like giant laser beam fights at the end either. It's just like you've got your street level guy who's just got super strength.
Yeah,
and super friendship.
Well, he was blessed by the gods. And what I did like was that gun, the sniper rifle that the governor had with all the fancy stuff on it. I'm like, can I get that movie prop, please? I want it for reasons.
I know, right? Yeah, like, yeah.
Even if it doesn't work, I want it just to put on my wall because it's so pretty.
And that scene where he's grabbing that sniper, he's grabbing it in the air after he's been launched up after a tree has fallen into his car, you know? And so he's doing a trick shot, you know, 360 no-scope.
React to ambush.
Yeah.
Totally how they trained me at the infantry school. Totally. Jump in the air like you just don't care. Wave your rifle around.
360, no scope.
Yeah.
No aim even, because, you know, you are one with your rifle. that's what they really were talking about in the infantry creed. That was it. You are one with your rifle, so you don't even have to aim.
Yeah.
I did like the trailer. I thought that they picked good scenes. And there's always a danger with the trailer where they show you all the cool stuff.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's no, okay, don't need to watch the movie. This was not one of those movies.
There was so much cool stuff. They did show nothing but cool stuff, but there was more. There was still more.
The sheer density of, like, cool action sequences in that movie is extremely high.
Have you seen the movie Hot Shots Part Deux?
No.
I have not, but I am familiar with it.
It's a comedy movie that's kind of mocking all the 80s faction figures, and as this guy's going around killing things, it's like got a running body count on the bottom. More kills in this movie. More kills than Rambo. More, you know, whatever. I felt like they needed one of those scrolls with that forest scene at the end where he's fighting the special forces.
It
had that level of absurdity, but in all of the best ways. And while the combat in the all of that was exaggerated, like, it also wasn't a comedy. It wasn't unserious either. Somehow it managed to be serious while also being, like, not taking itself seriously. It's
serious but ridiculous.
Yes, serious but ridiculous. I will go with that.
I love the thematics at first where it's like, okay, this guy has a horse. He's always going to have a horse. This guy has a motorcycle. And then at the very end, like in that forest fight scene.
Do we need spoiler warning? Is that a thing, or do we just talk spoilers from the get-go?
I'm going to assume that a movie that's at this point 2 years old, that if they really wanted to watch it, they're going to pause it, click the link, and watch it, because at this point, you can't talk about how awesome it is without a little bit of spoilers for this one. Yeah. So carry on, sir. Carry on.
Well, just like the consistency of it, because I remember us watching it for the first time, and it's like, oh man, this guy just rode a horse in here. I'm sure it's going to be like a thing. I wonder where he's going to get. And then, like, the guy comes through the woods in a motorcycle. Like, he's got it. He's got it.
Yeah, yeah. Because at the beginning, or, you know, at the beginning, the first quarter, end of the first quarter of the movie, you know, when they do the bridge scene where they save that boy, because Raju is on the motorcycle and Beam's. No, I got it backwards. Beam is on the motorcycle and Raju's on the horse. You know, I was like, oh, and that's where their friendship starts. And then at the end of the movie, not where their friendship ends, but like where the climax happens, you know, there's a motorcycle, you know, but they don't show anyone on a horse for that whole fight scene until Beam gets on a motorcycle. And then, like Matt's talking about, just some random guy on a horse shows up in the forest out of nowhere. And then Raju takes him off, you know, beats him up, steals the horse, and then they just go.
Sadly, he did not beat him with the horse, though.
Yeah, the funny thing is, if you pause the first, like, 3 seconds of the movie, they have this whole long two-paragraph thing. No animals were harmed in the making of this movie. They were all created with AI. It's like, PETA, leave us alone.
Yeah, it's so good. But, you know, there's that great scene when they attack the compound with the right zoo. Yeah.
So, oh, yeah, yeah.
He just throws the zoo at them.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think Beam literally throws like a mountain lion or a cougar or something at some British guy.
No, he does it a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just throws a jaguar at a guy. And just like, here it is.
Yeah, and there was the scene in the compound where they're attacking to try to save Molly the first time. And they have at one point, Rama, the cop, has the brazier, the fire holder. It's a brazier.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then somehow Beam has this, like, hose from the fountain, so they're like polar opposites, fire and water.
Yeah, that's the theme throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, I thought, and then they switch at the end, which was kind of cool.
Oh, here's another one for you, JR. What'd you think of the Greek chorus, like all the music that was inset in between with the subtitles?
I didn't watch it with subtitles on.
Okay.
So there were parts I didn't understand, but I could understand most of it because most of it is in English.
Uh-huh.
So
all the inset music actually is a Greek chorus. So if you ever watch the movie again, like, if you put the subtitles on, because they actually sing about what's happening in the plot and how cool their friendship is.
Yeah.
So here's the thing I will complain about of this movie. My only complaint is that whoever did the sound stuff needs to be fired, because the volume for the speaking is really low. The volume for the music is really high. And so you're constantly like yo-yoing up and down from like extremes to try to get the volume, not to blow your speakers or your eardrums. And so I'm sure I lost something in that. But when I watched it on Netflix, the sound adjustment levels were just way off. I'm seeing that a lot more in modern movies for some reason, where like the volume for the talking is not as loud enough to be heard over all the background stuff. So you can't hardly hear them.
You know, maybe it's to mask all the bad writing that's coming out of Hollywood these days.
Well, this wasn't Hollywood, though. This was even cooler. This was
talking. Yeah, sorry. Just talking about the stuff coming from this side of the pond.
Yeah. I don't know who would have done the audio mastering, if that would have been done on this side of the water.
Yeah, because it is dubbed. Like, it is redubbed since the original language to Telugu. So,
Okay. So I watched the dubbed version then.
Yeah.
So I think we watched it in another language, and I think the audio was actually pretty okay. Do you remember which one that was, Jonathan, that we were listening to?
So we watched it in Hindi.
Yeah. But
that still wasn't the OG. For some reason, Netflix just doesn't have, or maybe they do now.
The export license or whatever, I think, was a big deal. And so, like, Hindi was the more common language to have exported along with English. And I remember you kept saying, like, it doesn't matter what language we watch it in, let's watch it in Portuguese. And I was like,
Dude, Portuguese sounds so cool. But the problem with the Portuguese dub is they dubbed the English parts as well. Like,
Portuguese sounds silly.
Well,
like Spanish that got punched in the mouth.
Yeah, Spanish with rocks in your mouth.
Or drunks. It's just fun, guys. It's fun. Like this movie. Anyway, but one thing that was kind of interesting with that might have been lost watching it all in English is there are some scenes where it's like when Bean can't speak English on that date he goes on with what's her name?
Jenny.
Yeah. And so that like joke where he tries to memorize Jenny's name and she's saying, don't call me.
Phrase.
Yeah, like don't call me whatever the word is.
Mimza? Don't call me Mimza. It's just Jenny.
Yeah.
What is Mimza? Do you know if you guys?
I think it's a local like British Raj like title of respect for a lady, like ma'am kind of stuff.
Okay, so it's the she didn't want to be treated as nobility; just wanted to be treated as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which made her the only good person in the entire compound. That's why he put her in a car and let her leave.
He let her live when they were killing everybody.
Yeah.
And of course there's the stereotypical bad guy who's so bad he's just bad for no reason. The one British officer who he fights who locks the door to the compound.
Yeah.
He's got all these medals. He's just a fat, ugly dude. And I'm like on the one hand, okay, I can believe that he might have been overweight if he was nobility because like there were no PT requirements for their military if you could buy a commission.
Right.
But like he was just bad for no reason. Which was weird.
Yeah. He was like over the top, like Snidely Whiplash levels of evil.
Yeah.
You know,
a lot of the villains were really just over the top, like comically, there's just like comic bad where it's like, I will kick puppies for a living.
Almost like they don't like the British or something.
I know. Right. And I think
it is a passion we share.
The governor's wife was even worse. Like her level of sadism during the flogging scene.
I keep this fanged whip around for no reason other than I enjoy
it. Where did she pull that from?
Yeah, it's from my personal collection.
Hey, we don't judge what her and her husband do in their bedroom, all right?
Whatever
you're into, lady. But the randomly kidnapping the little girl for no reason also made no sense.
She like wanted her as like a songbird. She basically she bought her for like two tuppence or whatever she gave her.
And she liked the what do you call that? The henna?
Yeah, the henna tattoo stuff. Yeah.
And they brought that back at the end because that's one of they focus in on when she meets Justice. They zoom into her hand so you can see that henna.
Yeah.
Which for some reason is still there because I thought the movie took place over a longer timeline.
Well, she probably got it reapplied, you know.
Could be.
Yeah. Oh, but actually,
it still worked. The symbolism of it was just so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things I thought that they got right in this movie. The symbolisms that they used throughout were just so perfect. So like Bean, he fought the tiger at the end, at the beginning to become the shepherd for his tribe. And he gets scraped or he gets clawed by the front and back in the process by this mountain lion. and you end up seeing that's his war paint now on his face is like this, the symbolic lion claw marks with his war paint. You see that kind of stuff throughout. Like whoever was doing this from the set to everything was perfect.
Yeah, I feel like there was a real love for what they were doing as they were doing it, you know?
There was also a lot of like just straight up consistency that you don't see a lot anymore of that kind of thing, where like the something they introduce kind of even offhandedly at the very beginning is held through all the way to the end.
You see that in the progression of Rom's uniform, where he gets more medals and more medals throughout for his service. And like you can watch the progression of his uniform. I couldn't tell you. I mean, they're consistent, same medals, same place. If it's the right order, I wouldn't know. What I can tell you is they were consistent. I so many times you'll see movies nowadays where they'll show the army and one way the ribbons are this way and then they flip them the next day with no rhyme or reason to it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to get it wrong, just be consistently wrong. At least that's better than moving it around.
Yeah.
I mean, even America, even the film in the 80s when I think it was a lot better, they didn't do that. If you watch Rambo, because I stayed home sick one day and I watched all of them in back-to-back order, his whip marks on his back from his POW days, they move around.
Uh-huh.
But at least it moves around movie to movie and not scene to scene.
Yeah.
This one, the scene-to-scene stuff was so, like, uniform. Like, they paid attention to those little details.
Yeah. And honestly, like I think the movie really gets a lot of like the little details that make you believe it. And so it never really like the action is ridiculous, but it also from the core storytelling elements, it doesn't stretch your suspension of disbelief where it's like, yes, I emotionally would react the same way this character if I were in his position.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's over the top just to get us emotionally to the place of where reality would be, you know, like and we wish we would be able to punch through a wall, you know, or, you know, like when Raju is so pissed that he betrayed his best friend, you know, and he's just like punching that wall apart. I mean, yeah, that's
demolishing his heavy bag.
Yeah.
Several times, actually.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of something we've talked to that Jonathan, Matt and I have talked about before. And like, when you try to tell a story, like even something that's just real, like you tend to over-exaggerate just a little, you embellish it just a little because like the feeling of it never matches up to like what actually happened. Like when you were in the moment. So I think the movie and its exaggerations kind of like bring that emotion like back up to mind of like how it feels for everything that's going on.
Right. Because there's so many things that just can't happen. Like when Beam goes to rescue Raju near the end of the movie and he's able to, you know, use geolocation, putting his ear to the ground and doing that little dance beat that the they
friendship
did.
Friendship
dance. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's just like, doo, 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 doo. Wait, wrong movie. Anyway,
so is there any truth to the rumors that the Literate Bastards have their own friendship dance that you guys break out into?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
It looks eerily like the 1984 dance. Crystal Light Championships for the aerobic for the aerobic championships.
A lot of clapping, a lot of jumping. It's a good time.
You gotta get the blood flowing, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the cool thing about that special dance is it's scalable, you know. So if we get any more literates in here, we can add them.
That's appropriate. Speaking of dancing, the dance-off scene with the guy that didn't like the Indians, and of course he has to call them dirty brown people because you need to make American and modern audiences know he's the bad guy.
Of course. How else would they know?
Right, right. So he has to not just be insulting and a jerk. He has to be a racist insulting jerk.
I do want to say, in this guy's defense, he lasts the longest. You know, everyone gets tired, everyone takes a break, but British guy is still going when it's just, you know, Beam and Raju,
and him.
Yeah, so he's like he's up there. You know,
dancer. He just didn't know their dance and trips over his own 2 feet.
Right, yeah. Right.
And then everybody else gets a calf cramp.
Right, yeah. And then what a bro, Raju. You know, he sees Jenny's you know, look of hope, you know,
she's
and
the only one cheering for him.
Yeah. For Beam. And so Raju takes a fall to make Beam look good in the eyes of the girl. You know,
he jumps on those grenades over and over again, trying to hook Beam and Jenny up.
Yep.
And it leaves you at the end with, you know, you can decide, did they or didn't they get together? Because they don't say, but it ends on a happy note where they're at least smiling at each other. So there's room for that romance to develop or not.
Yeah.
And then but there's the culmination dance.
Yes.
Yeah. And Jenny was the only British character in that final dance scene, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The final dance scene was more an homage to Indian history, I'm guessing, based on the pictures they were showing.
Yeah, so, yeah. They kind of like the story was over, and like here's a bunch of cool guys that we want to venerate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was strangely a white lady that was one of the ones they venerated as part of this era. So I am curious enough about like their independence movement. I'll probably check a few books out from the library just because I want to know more. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely, they made you feel how much they suffered under the yoke of colonialism of the era. And if you just look at the statistics of like their death counts, because so much was being taxed and sent abroad that literally villages were dying off.
Yeah.
As my rough understanding from like a few class hours dedicated to this in general world history, I mean, it was not a pleasant time in India for them.
No, not at all. I think it's really interesting too, now that like this movie has achieved such prominence that it's getting people who like us who had never really learned about like in depth about Indian history. Cause like the only person that would ever come to mind is Mahatma Gandhi. He's like, oh yeah, he did the Indian like resistance.
Yeah. Movement.
That's what got them to leave. But well, what about everybody else?
And there were other resistance movements along the way that didn't succeed, which I would equally count. Like, I don't think you only get credit if you win. I think every time they stood up and put their lives on the line and their bodies on the line for their beliefs, like that's commendable. Even if I don't always agree with the various causes, like, I don't know. I think there's so many people have convictions without a willingness to stand behind them that I can respect anyone that will, you know, put their money where their mouth is, so to speak, even if I think their ideas are horrific. I mean, that at least is something.
Yeah.
And so there were a couple.
This guy's doing something.
Yeah. And so if you're familiar with the Sharp series, you know there were a couple of revolts in the 1800s too, early 1800s in India under the East Indian Company as well. So, I mean, there was constant struggle from their local, I guess, are they considered tribes or clans? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with extremely local Indian politics because there's like villages and tribes and stuff like that. It's all very localized.
Yeah, so there were different times throughout where various people rose up and tried to overthrow the British and the East India Company. So clearly what they really needed was someone to tell them the Redcoats were coming. Who if I land, what if I see?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they needed their own Paul Revere. Though I guess
Paul.
In the movie, you know, Beam and Raju were those guys, you know, on their horse and motorcycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they really, like, drove the point home with that whole speech that the governor kept talking about. Like, do you know how much this bullet costs?
Well, I mean, that's – yeah, there's something to that, though. I mean, like, bullets aren't cheap. So I get what he was saying, especially when you consider that it was – I mean, obviously not the racism, but right. The idea that bullets have a price, so don't waste mm-hmm. them. I mean, I still learned when we did the Mozambique drills, two to the chest, one to the head, give them a dollar's worth because the government paid approximately 22 cents per bullet, like at least by the currency of the early aughts when I was in.
I wish 5.56 was that cheap still.
Yeah, me too. the idea is like, you know, you want to make each shot count. Like I get to a point. Now, he took it to an absurd level. Why shoot them when you could pulverize them into a pulp and make their ending gruesome and painful?
Yeah. Use this tree branch I found.
Or this mallet that just happens to be laying there for some strange reason.
I don't know why we brought this, but have at it. Like, okay. Like,
and the mallet looks so comical. Like, it's like something out of, like, 1980s video game levels of comedy.
I know, right? Oh, dude, speaking of video game level stuff, what did you think of the end with all of the explosives and ammo just in the same room, you know, perfect for getting lit on fire and blowing up the whole
building? It's not absurd if you've ever, even in the colonial era, like weapons magazines were a thing because you wanted to separate the powder or the explosives. If it goes off, you don't want everything to go off, which is why those things existed. So the idea that the British would concentrate their explosives together away where it's presumably safe doesn't bother me. There's a reason it's surrounded by several walls and brick, right?
Well,
brick
they concentrated it all in the basement of his house.
But then even that isn't too unusual that, you know, you'd concentrate the seat of power where you would control, because that was the other part of it is, like, they were outnumbered. So if the Indians ever got those weapons, it'd be a problem for them. So keeping it under lock and key, even from a historical perspective, kind of makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that leaves them open to flying flaming motorcycles to destroy them.
Oh, yes.
Because why not?
That was not in the deliberate risk assessment.
No, it was not, apparently. And it should have been. Flying motorcycles for the win. I wonder who made those. Were those Harleys? They could have kind of gotten a little bit of...
Oh, they might have been like British make, actually.
Like, probably like Enfield.
Those rifles were sweet, though. Mm-hmm. What were those? Were those the
those Enfields? Were actually Enfields, I think, yeah.
I'm not a historic weapons expert.
Yeah, I think those were Lee Enfield rifles in like the old 303. But
My historical specialty was Colonial America, mm-hmm. mostly because I didn't want to learn a foreign language. Unlike Jonathan, I was not skilled with the tongues. But yeah, the weapons were consistent too. Like everyone, you didn't see random different weapons, with the exception of the weird dude in the suit and tie, who I guess he was like the aide, who had a pistol.
Manservant.
Yeah, the manservant had a pistol. But otherwise, everyone had the same weapon, the same bayonet. Like, it was consistent.
Yeah, and generally, like back in that era when the landed gentry were the officers who would run around with a pistol.
Yeah, and have you seen Captain Obvious commercials?
Yeah.
That's kind of what their uniform that the British officers were wearing reminded me of, the way they were portrayed. I don't know how accurate that would have been for what they were wearing, but it's but it was certainly shiny. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I was doing steampunk, that's what I'd want my uniform to look like.
I remember there being another alternate uniform for some of the British Raj, like historical stuff, where they actually had khaki shorts because it was so hot over there.
Yeah. Kind of like what they were wearing at the beginning of Raju's scene. I guess they were in pants, weren't they?
They were in pants the whole time.
But color.
Yeah.
I mean, the khaki was the uniform of the period for the British Army. So, I mean, that part wasn't off. They even showed them wearing the leggings. What are those called? I want to call them spats, but that's not it. Anyway, the things they had on their legs, the leg gathers, like even that was period done. When they did the close-up. Mm-hmm. I've seen that before in World War I stuff.
Nice.
It's designed to keep your pants tight so that way you don't have flapping around and getting caught on things when you're, you know, walking through.
Oh, it's like those little bands you used to put on your pants when you rode bikes.
Yeah. So, yeah. But not as cool, clearly.
Yeah.
What did you think of the symbolism they did where they were constantly showing the Constantina wire as the great divide between the haves and the have-nots?
I mean, pretty straightforward there, and like it definitely like played into like how they were being treated too.
And if you watch the scene where they're walking through the city and they're doing the bromance scene, you mm-hmm. even see on one side, Raj is Rama, the cop. I'm getting the names. He's Rama walking Raja. On one side, and it's colorful, it's clean, mm-hmm. neat, and then on the other side of the street, in the dirtier section, is Beam. Where it was clearly like the non-affiliated with the British and then the British servants, mm-hmm. like clean and dirty, wealth and poor.
Like yeah, and I think the other one too is that it's civilized versus rural, essentially, like urban versus rural, where a lot of the British stuff, they obviously went more very urban, very like organized, neat. And then like the more classical, like village life was represented by Beam.
Yes.
Yeah. Though I think that like on the nose symbolism is part of what made, you know, this movie great.
Because it just leaned into the trope.
Yeah, yeah. And it just leaned hard, you know. And like, hey, why worry? You know, we're just here to have a good time and learn about Indian fictional history. Well, not fictional, but, you know, exaggerated history.
Well, they had that in a disclaimer too. Like, you know, please don't sue us. although I don't think anyone that would have been in the 1920s fighting is probably still alive to sue.
Or would have anything against this movie.
Yeah, this movie was very pro the rebellion.
Maybe they were afraid the British were going to sue them.
Mm. Yeah, for showing them in such a comically evil light. Though they're probably used to that. I mean, the Patriot with Mel Gibson. You know,
I was just thinking that too. Yes, the Tarleton's character.
It was like, when did we still care about what the British thought since 1776?
Nah. That's the running joke is when they were doing the Kate and Meghan Markle. Was it Meghan Markle? I don't know. The Royals, when they were all over the news.
Oh, yeah.
My standard answer is we fought a war in the 1700s, so I don't have to care anymore.
Yep.
Yeah, twice.
Yeah. 1812, the electric boogaloo.
We beat them twice and we saved them twice.
Well, they did burn down our house.
True.
But
I mean, it did let us remodel. So, I mean, I guess.
Don't make us team up with France to beat you again.
Yeah, but we don't want them to surrender. So we got to be careful. We got to give them this pep talk for the French so they don't surrender.
Yeah.
Well, there's a tunnel now, so they can just walk there instead of having to take the boat.
This is true. Our entire country is the size of one state.
That's the one thing when I was overseas, we did some, obviously I work with coalition forces, and then like we'd talk about places, they can't fathom the idea, like that Texas, for instance, is bigger than some of their countries.
And
So like when I talk about, you know, 2 hour drive, like that's doable for work. And they're like, what are you talking about? I could get from one end of my country to another in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like they have trouble fathoming like the vast distance of our country.
I think that's like a very American thing too, where we talk about distances and time. Like, oh yeah, it'll take me an hour to get there. Versus you ask somebody from Europe, like, oh, it's X number of kilometers. Like, uh-huh. Like how long is that?
Yeah. You could do the math, but I mean, sometimes the time isn't conducive. Like, oh, I'm driving on the interstate 60 miles an hour. So in theory, 60 miles is an hour, but anybody who lives near DC knows 60 miles might be 4 hours.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's just that's for us, though. I mean, like, you talk to a European and you try and like get them to give you a time of travel, it's like they never know.
Well, even Americans that don't live in cities and have to deal with traffic, they don't talk about distance and time either. They do it in distance still. So I think it's just kind of like, you know, who has what's more I don't know what the word is, I guess more relevant, you know. Conducive. To that person's, you know, society, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Point is, different cultures, different stuff. We drive a lot, have to deal with traffic, so time's important. And
speaking of driving, they did have some fancy cars that the governor was driving around in. Those old 1920s cars, the suicide doors and everything.
Yeah.
My God, those were glorious. I mean, I'd almost want to be an extra on that movie just so I could drive those cars. Like, I don't have to, like, do any cool things. You don't have to show my face. Just let me drive the cars, please.
Yeah, right. Those are pretty fancy.
They were. And they looked so well kept. So, I mean, they're probably reproductions, but I don't care. They were awesome.
Well, knowing some of the stuff that they still have around India, they might actually just be actual originals that are super well kept with like some repro parts.
Wait, really?
Yeah, because a lot of the stuff in India, like they just kept it. Like when I was there once, I saw stuff from like the early 1900s still in use. Like when a guy was walking around with like an old Springfield, and it's just like as part of the police force. I was like, what the heck?
Okay, cool. Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, a lot of studios have just sort of old cars just on hand. Like, oh, what time period we're in? Oh, 70s. All right, just pull out the 70s cars. And so there's a lot of people that just have pristine vehicles that they just keep in storage, and they bring them out for period movies.
So what did you think about the governor and his wife as characters?
Love to hate him.
The most straightforward, comically evil people I've ever seen.
It was like, immediately, you know, you could tell like, oh, yep, they're evil.
I didn't know they invented Botox in the early 1900s.
Yeah. Well,
so Catherine doesn't necessarily, like, the version I watched, because I watched the translation, mm-hmm. Like she took the girl, but like she doesn't necessarily come off as comically evil, just insensitive, because there was something lost in that translation where it wasn't clear why she was taking her.
Oh yeah, it was
because there was a trans, like in the scene she's speaking English, the village doesn't understand, and their manservant, like, is
pay translated. Her for her song or whatever is like what she says, and then like it was like, I'm buying your child so she can come sing for me.
Well,
and it wasn't uncommon in British society for the rich to kind of do that to poor kids, although I think it was more considered a good thing. Send my kid to the rich house to learn to be a scullery maid so they don't have to beg on the street or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, just from my limited understanding, because I've read Charles Dickens, right?
Like, matter of perspective. On British,
right? But my understanding was that wasn't uncommon for the as part of a cultural thing. So I kind of took that more as a mismatch of cultures, like misunderstanding.
Yeah.
What about go ahead.
It was definitely just like one of those things where it harkened back to an old like societal standard that we don't see anymore. So like, especially like they portrayed the villages as actual villages, you know, yeah. Where like you see those people, it's like, that's just how they live. Which is something I think is really lost for the verisimilitude of like Western made movies these days.
Yeah, we can't recreate that feel.
Yeah. Because like hearing my mom talk about like growing up in a village with a canal that ran through the middle or whatever, and we used to like, she used to dive in and swim every day and like do these pranks with these boats that would go by. Like that's a very foreign experience to modern people. It's even a foreign experience to people that live there now because everything's so polluted.
Yeah, I understand that's a problem in India now too. So it was amazing how clean everything looked, because you see modern pictures from modern India and you see like rivers of trash, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Hey, industrial society was a mistake in certain areas.
But back to the bad guys, I thought it was amazing. And I guess from the very beginning, you know, it's kind of neutral. But then when the governor orders the man to kill bash in the lady's girl's head. Mom.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that was the moment, you know, mic drop, like, oh, now we know they're straight up evil. Yeah, and that was actually kind of a
puppy moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was really like overly brutal with how much they went in on the makeup and stuff to show the blood and damage done to the mom.
The
first time we watched it, we just assumed she was dead.
Yeah, I did too, until the end when they showed like, oh, okay, I guess she didn't die.
Oh, yeah. She's just severely concussed.
Yeah, I mean, because there was as much blood was pouring out. But that's the other part. Like, they had so much blood pouring out of Beam when he was being whipped.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that dude lost all of his blood. He's dead.
Yeah.
Have rivers, literal rivers of blood in a guy to live.
Splattering everywhere.
You know, speaking of that whip scene, go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, like, the arrows and the quiver, that he just doesn't run out of blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have
got time to bleed, as Governor once told us.
This is what happens when you stay hydrated.
No. He wore his PT belt and changed his socks and took his IV.
Take a knee and drink water every now and again. You'll just have that much.
All right. So you were saying back to that.
Yeah, game. Yeah. So with the scene where Beam's getting whipped and he's tied up and stuff, and then he sings, you know, and mostly in Western media, you know, in musicals or whatever, they sing the song and then the characters never address that they sang, you know, it's almost like the singing never happens. But in that movie, you know, Raju is like talking to someone else and it's like, I've been trying to unite India, you know, but for years and years, but he did it in one day with just one song.
So in American like musicals, when they do the singing, it's presumed that that's just the dialogue. They just happen to be singing it. So they don't really acknowledge that the singing happened, and that is a difference. I don't know if that's a Bollywood / Hollywood thing or just something they did different. I haven't seen a lot of this stuff, but I'm game to watch some more.
Yeah, our musical theater tradition is just different. It's just interesting seeing interpretations of it that way.
Yeah. That was kind of cool. And he was talking about, he was trying to arm the populace so they could fight back. Raj, the cop, was, and with one song, Beam had inspired the weapon of freedom or whatever in everyone. It was kind of the speech he gave, which was well written. It was kind of touching the way he worded it, a lot more poetic than what I'm saying right now.
Yeah.
I
also found it really interesting to see the scale of what they wanted come together and him realizing how a grassroots movement would be like so much more effective when he's inspired the fire and everybody to do the revolution. But his goal had been to be arming an entire, like at least multiple villages worth of people with guns from the British. to incite the revolution. Meanwhile, like Beam's whole thing, which is like, I was just a country bumpkin. I just wanted to get Molly back. Like, I didn't see what you saw. I didn't know what you were doing.
Yeah, the bigger picture. And that scene is so touching when Beam meets Raju's, are they married or just fiance? Yeah, fiance. And, you know, she essentially retells their whole story, or like, that'd just be fascinating, you know, to be Beam, hear this woman tell my story back to me that she heard from her fiance, and then realizing like, oh no, what have I done? I betrayed my best friend. Well, and that's what he says, you know.
And her name is Sita, S-I-T-A, by the way. Yeah. I just looked at the credits.
Yeah, Sita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was
rescue him from prison where he's been doing nothing but pull-ups.
Yeah.
No, she's going to get the body, remember?
Yeah, she was expecting him to die.
I'm talking about Beam, where he runs over and Raju's just been doing nothing but pull-ups the whole time.
Yeah, and I love
eating once a week, by the way, because bad guys go to bad. They wouldn't see them.
And the trailer showed this, that scene where like Raju and Beam are doing like a piggyback ride, and Beam is doing squats, and then Raju is like doing pull-ups with both of them. And then that pays off later in the movie when they kind of do a Transformers combining thing. Yeah. And Raju's like riding on top with the rifles and stuff. And then when they climb that tower together, yeah. I just loved how fun that was.
All I'm thinking is there was some crazy Indian Army NCO who came up with that as a trust exercise, and they just decided to put it in the movie.
Right. Have you seen videos? This isn't in the movie, of like the Indian military parades.
And oh, they it's have crazy. My knees hurt just watching them march that way.
Yeah.
I mean, the Brits do it too. The stomping around thing. It's very European.
The goose stepping.
Yeah. Well, I mean, goose stepping is very specific angles, I think.
Yeah.
Because that was a very German thing. But just the stomping around. And there's this one scene, or not a scene, that you can find videos on YouTube of the Indian and the, I think it's Pakistan that share a border, where they
really
weird dancing at the gate that links the two cities. And every day the sergeants of each guard like do a dance off for the audience. I'm like, again, and then they got those ridiculous hats that I'm like, the Swiss army would kill for those at the Vatican.
It's really funny too, because of how much they hate each other and how much history they actually share as a people.
Yeah. When you watch them do the closing of the gate ceremonially, they appear to respect each other, at least the soldiers at each gate.
Yeah, maybe those guys have learned to
get along. I learned from another guy actually that I worked with, who was a Pashto linguist, and like he learned Hindi as well because they're mutually intelligible.
Right.
And, like they share so much history because people used to just move back and forth across the area the whole time. They're basically they're mostly the same. Everything's mutually intelligible, and only at some point that they go, "Oh no, you can't be here."
Interesting.
Yeah.
But speaking of characters, what did you guys think of Beam and Raju as characters?
Beautiful. Like that bromance, you know, just and their psychic bond, you know, and we were joking about it, that once you get a level of muscle mass on your body, you just develop this psychic link with other
you see muscle people. Other ripped dudes and go, yes, I know.
Yeah, that's what
they want you to think they're just flexing in front of a mirror. What they don't tell you is that mirror is actually quantumly linked to other muscle heads, and they are actually doing sign language.
Right? Yeah, so that scene on the bridge was just so, like, they've never met each other, Raju and Beam, they've never met each other. They both see this boy in danger. You know, this train was derailed and a bunch of oil got onto the water, and this boy in this little like raft is surrounded by fire, and he's going to drown unless they rescue him. And they just look at each other, point in one direction, point in another direction. You know, the beam is like,
they did hand and arm signals too. That made absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
Of course. They pointed at each other. Wait, you have enough muscle mass. You can understand me.
And they were so far away, but I loved like Raju's like looking through the crowd, and then Beam just like raises his hand, you know, on the beach of the riverfront or whatever.
Games like, recognizes game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it was just so cool to see that instant link, you know. And another thing, you know, to get about like story tech, so much showing versus telling. They just showed that Beam and Raju got along and had this connection, you know, and they just did stuff together and they worked well together, instead of, you know, spending 10 minutes telling us like Beam and Raju are best friends even though they've never met before, blah blah blah. I just love that they skipped all that crap and just went straight. Well,
they didn't technically together. Skip it. They had a Greek chorus sing it.
Well, I guess maybe that's the cheat. That's the secret Hollywood needs to, you know, latch onto is show the thing and then have a chorus sing what they would normally tell.
So what you're saying is make Greek choruses great again.
Yes.
Yes.
Bring it back. Bring it back, baby. You know, and Hercules, the animated movie, they had a literal Greek chorus, you know, in their vases or whatever.
So based on what you're saying, it's worth watching it in the original, I guess, Hindi version versus the straight American dub, because
yes.
I did not get the Greek chorus.
Oh, yeah. Well, watch it with subtitles a Hindi
dub. With subtitles, yeah.
Yeah.
That is cool. It also makes you wonder, maybe the people with muscles aren't stupid like the running joke is. Maybe we just don't speak their language because we haven't ascended to that level of muscle brodom.
Yeah.
One day.
So if you were out there and you were a muscle bro, can you like translate it back to normal person English and tell us if we're on the right track? Did we crack the code to your secret society? Do we need to drink more protein powder? I don't know. Tell us the secrets.
Yeah.
What's Oonga the track? Boonga protein. PR.
They didn't show them eating though. So other than the one time with the rice, so we don't know, like, were they doing the protein shakes? Maybe that was the secret of the revolution.
Maybe
snake blood.
Snake blood. And maybe they put protein in their curry.
Maybe that's what it was. That's the secret sauce to their curry. Yeah. With bromance, love and protein powder.
Always.
So, as individuals, did you think that Bheem and Raj were like well written? I thought they were pretty fleshed out in a way that sometimes characters in modern movies feel very one dimensional. Like, okay, I get it. They're here to serve one very narrow purpose and that's it. And they have no life outside that one, whatever. But like, I got both with the main characters and just in general, everyone felt real.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of nuance that I don't think we've seen very often anymore especially given a 3-hour runtime, they had the time to flesh it out where each of the characters had a goal in the plot, a personal desire, and then the conflict of where that would meet.
The way it was broken up into acts, though, leads me to believe that this could have been maybe streamed once and it wouldn't have been as long. Hmm. I don't know how it was originally aired, though. Did it air all at once? It's just a 3-hour movie and it's just a difference. Because we kind of think anything longer than an hour and a half is too long for a movie. I know people that complain at 2-hour movies.
Right.
I think this was presented entirely as a single whole movie.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of par for the course because the other film that this studio made, Bahubali, they made 2 3-hour films, you know? So it's this 6-hour epic that they couldn't fit into one film. So I think this is just kind of, at least for them, par for the course. And American films used to be this long, you know, like Once Upon a Time in the West is 3 hours. Ben-Hur is super long.
Some of the newer movies are also this long, too. It's just that we are wasting a lot more screen time not actually telling a story.
Maybe that's the difference. I don't feel like I worried when I realized it was 3 hours. I'm like, okay, I'll just fast forward through the boring parts. But there was nowhere that I wanted to fast forward through. And I'm like, oh, they could have cut this scene. Like, I thought all of it was good.
Yeah. Well, that's like why we love the movie so much. It's just it is incredibly tightly written.
Despite everything serves the plot.
So was this based on a book or was this did this just straight come out of, you know, the movie as was?
I think it just came straight out as the movie as was.
Okay. So definitely we're going to have to find out how on point that was from, obviously it was over the top historical and they made a point of telling you this was a fictionalized version of it, but it definitely left us wanting more, I think, of the to learn more about the history of the era and of the whatever. Did you have any favorite secondary characters in the movie besides Raj and Bheem?
I thought one of my favorite characters, and he was only there for that one scene, is the junior cop that screws up. He's like the gate guard, and Raju is with Beam's friend, you know, and he's like, hey, let us through, pretend we're normal people or whatever, but I'm really captain so-and-so of the military. And then that dude salutes Raj and the face on Raju is so priceless. She's like, "Oh, you idiot! You ruined everything." Anyway, I have a soft spot for that screw up. I think that character is hilarious.
A very human mistake,
right? Yeah, because they drill it into you, like you got to salute officers no matter what. But then my other favorite—I mean, I love Sati, even though she was only there for the second half.
Yeah. Friggin' Raju's dad.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's like at the death scene where like he goes out all kamikaze style.
Yeah.
I wonder if India has an equivalent, but he's like just smiling at the as he's surrendering himself, and he's like, "Load, aim," and suddenly everyone's freaking out and backing up. It's like, who the hell is he talking to?
Yeah.
And that was another cool thing about the flashbacks. Like they had their own narrative too. Like it could have been its own movie.
Yeah, and I liked the they showed that he was always a good shot, so the later stuff seems less fantastical. Yeah. I really liked the lesson the dad had the kid is like, this is just one man and one rifle, and we halted this whole army's advance. Imagine what we could do with an army of these. We could drive them from our land, right? Like that was such a powerful scene from father to son. Mm. And then he like, okay, this is a huge spoiler, but Raj kills his own dad to save his village. On his dad's orders, and in doing so, like takes out the people attacking them. And they show like, they zoom in on whatever that child actor that played baby Raj, like he's crying and he's like, he doesn't want to do it. And he's looking at his mom who's like lying dead, shot by the British, and he wants to stop fighting. And the dad is sitting next to him crying too, but he's like, no, we're not done yet. Keep firing, and you see other villagers like getting away, and just that personal sacrifice in that scene was that was epic.
Yeah, 10 out of 10.
Absolutely. I can't think of a single scene that I didn't think was a 10 out of 10.
So I'm curious, what was your favorite scene in the whole movie?
I really like the tactical nature of the scene where he's holding them off by just one well-trained marksman with a cover and concealment is able to halt an entire army advancing in the open.
Yeah.
That's not unrealistic. I mean, you've got historical precedent for that. I mean, some Marine snipers, Carlos Hathcock, rumored, I don't know if they've ever confirmed it, but supposedly did that to a whole battalion of North Vietnamese troops in the Vietnam War, just by picking them off randomly. One person from like the right position can do that.
Yeah, especially if that advancing group isn't as well trained or as well disciplined.
I got the impression that they were all, well, at some level they all had good training. It just,
it's scary as crap when you're getting targeted by a sniper.
No, it is. No, what I mean is like what the village became is just a basically a military encampment instead of a normal village when he comes back, when dad comes back, right? When he leaves the British Army after they, take the Super Mario Brothers mallet to the village elder. Yeah. Like they did over and over again, like nothing but that for hours. And so it wasn't that the British were poorly trained. I just think that he continued the training almost to its own like martial arts with his weapon. Like gung fu, I guess. Gung fu. Yeah. So I want to knock anything to the British and their advance, kneeling and standing. They were offering the side profile, which is exactly how I trained in the late 90s, because you didn't have the bulletproof, the flak jacket with the chest inserts. So you wanted as small of a profile as possible. Like that seemed period accurate for what I understand of the era. It's not too different than what I learned before body armor became ubiquitous, right?
Yeah.
So for me, that was my favorite scene. And I guess my favorite secondary character would be Jenny, just that dynamic with her and Beam. And she was totally down to flirt with him, even though her culture would tell her that was wrong and she'd be shunned.
Right.
Well, they barely spoke each other's language.
That was a lot harder to get if you watch the English dubbed, but then the way Beam did the head wobbles, all bobbleheaded, like got it across, which I thought was comical. And he's like nodding no, and then Raj is like, no, shake your head yes. Every guy needs a wingman like that to help them get a date.
Yeah, willing to throw nails out into the road.
To break the law. Who cares? Cop's going to break the law just for his bud. To help her, help him,
I got you, friend.
He's like, I'm going to help you get a girl's number. So what about you, Adam? What did you think? What was your favorite scene and what was your favorite secondary character?
I think same favorite secondary character as you. I really liked that whole that dynamic and that the whole little like side love story. That was the bro moments with that was so good. But my favorite scene I think has to be Raj's introduction when his CEO tells him to go arrest a man in the angry mob. And he's like, oh, wait, no, that's not a good idea. And then Raj is like, no, I got this.
So that's
and he actually, just does it.
You're underselling it. So they're all in a compound surrounded for whatever reason. The masses of India rose up around this compound in the middle of nowhere.
Full on riot,
shaking the fence. There's like a handful of them and hundreds of whatever. And somebody throws a rock and it hits. I think it was the governor's picture.
Yeah, it knocks down the governor's picture.
I wasn't sure if that was like supposed to be the royalty or the governor.
Oh, yeah, like the king's picture or something.
Yeah, but he's like, I want that man's head. And then everyone looks at him like, oh. And then the guy starts whimpering almost. That gives that order. And suddenly, out of nowhere, Raj is just like, I got you, bro. He grabs a stick with like a police truncheon.
Yeah.
He does a jump flip over the
10-foot tall fence. And he takes his hat off first, right?
Yeah, he hands his hat to another guard.
No, he sets it on the barrel, remember?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it zooms in on the British crown on his hat. And then he just jumps off up, essentially different height items to flip over the fence, lands in the crowd, and just starts throwing his baton. And then just when you think he's done for, the crowd is kind of piled on him. He hears the guy in his head, give me this guy's head. And he just like, okay, I guess I'm not done yet. I haven't got this guy's head. And he just starts wailing on him.
Yeah, he just like, waves through the crowd, just smashes everybody left and right.
He just Doom Marines his way across this crowd of people. And like all the way up into the point of where he actually gets the guy. It's just insane to watch.
I can tell you that crowd control does not work that way.
And I think that's a good thing on the movie's part of setting, because that's the first action scene, right, of the movie?
The tiger capture.
Gotcha. So the second action scene.
It's the scene that introduces Raju, because like Beam gets introduced with the tiger capture. It's like, okay, this guy's so badass, he captured a tiger with his bare hands, essentially.
But that at least didn't suspend disbelief. He just was fast. Like, he's running this course to get them to follow him because they were going after what he thought was a wolf that was attacking their herd. So he's going to trap the wolf, right, to stop whatever. And they had basically like a net snare that he was trying to lead them across. And suddenly Lion sees the Beam, jumps for Beam. He dives and attacks the wolf. And so he keeps going. And suddenly it's not the wolf chasing him, it's the lion. And the trap just was not ideal to hold something that big. But nothing about what you saw there. I mean, having studied hunter-gatherer societies, like none of that part at least broke the suspension of disbelief for me in the way that the fight scene with Raj did.
Right. Go ahead.
It is kind of interesting that when they showcase both characters in each of those introductions, like because of how Bean like captures the large cat, like it's almost like they show a sort of intelligence to him and a sort of like skill versus Raj, who just like brute forces his way across the crowd. So it's like two different, it's the fire and water thing again, where like the water is patient and like can like, erode stone through sheer patience. And then the fire is just like consuming. So that was just kind of another cool like showcasing of each of their like just personalities as well.
Though Raju is the one that was planning for 30 years. But I wanted to say that Raju's intro is the part where it just sets the expectation. Like, don't, like, physics is gone. Like, we don't care about it, and that's okay. This is fun.
These men are superheroes.
Yeah.
So that would be equivalent of ours, with Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter kind of flick for them.
Yeah.
I would now like to see Bollywood tell the story of the American Revolution, or Tollywood, like these guys, Penn Studio. Let them do it.
Yeah.
I could just now, like, I could just see, like, George Washington randomly breaking out and dance with Cornwallis and then, like, ripping his head off for no reason other than because.
And he's just incredibly jacked.
Yeah, and he's jacked. Oh, I would watch the hell out of that.
It'd be fascinating to see India or any other country take on America's history because, like, oh, man, I think it was, like a Chinese propaganda movie where, like, they're depicting, like, the U.S. Navy, and I think it was MacArthur. Which I forget which.
Oh, you're talking about, yeah.
But anyway, yeah. They just make America like look so badass, and it's just like it was almost like a backfire propaganda. Where it's like, now you just made America look even cooler, man. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
The movie Team America that was supposed to be a lampooning of the U.S. war policy and foreign policy, yeah. And then like all the troops were like quoting the movie. It was like a cult classic with the. For people they were supposedly mocking were like, no, we love this shit.
Yeah.
Well, same thing with Starship Troopers too.
Yeah. That's a little bit more complicated of a depiction, I think. But it's definitely, I mean, I enjoyed it. So yeah.
First you must learn how to laugh at yourself.
Yes.
And then the guy next to you.
I've seen some of the Chinese propaganda with the World War II versus the Japanese. Mm-hmm. Some of that's pretty over the top as well. Not to the level of Bollywood with like the singing and the dancing and the, mm-hmm. you know, superhuman fighting flips and stuff, but
it's definitely
makes me want to watch more in this sort of genre.
Yeah.
So if you do have, dear listener, any other Bollywood or Tollywood movies you want us to review, like hit them up. I'll drag these three back with us and we'll
do the thing. Oh yeah.
Cause this was a lot of fun. What did you think of the plot overall?
Keep it simple.
Yeah, it was so straightforward that like it was super easy to follow, but also very emotionally resonant.
Yeah, and it was the same plot as You've Got Mail with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan in the day, you know, except that was a love story, you know, where a man and a woman secretly talking to each other via email, but they don't know each other in person, then they meet in real life, and they're kind of at odds, you know. One owns this Barnes & Noble type book conglomerate. One owns like a little bookstore, and they have to fight each other economically, I guess. But then they fall in love. And, you know, Raju and Beam, you know, it's not romantic. It's just a bromance. But
they love the revolution.
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, just that, I guess that dramatic irony, because we learn almost immediately that, or we know from the get-go that Raju is undercover. You know, but
and also Beam is undercover as like the other, like as the guy from the village.
And you, they do
some dude in the village.
They do show you when they're talking about what Raj does when he's like flipping around, and they say they're more afraid of Raj than they are this supposed shepherd that's coming to look for Molly.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they pretty much showed that. Oh, and when speaking of fear and stuff, at the scene right before when they've got Beam in prison, and he's like talking about how we can torture them and make it even worse for him emotionally, and the Governor Buxton is like, "Now you've learned the lessons of empire."
Yeah,
that scene was so on the nose, and I'm like, "Yeah, I know exactly what you did, and I still like it."
What's the actor's name for the governor? It's kind of a famous actor.
Ray Stevenson. He's dead.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. He passed away.
Yeah.
But he also played in that Star Wars show, Ahsoka. He was the villain in that, and he was by far the best part of that show. Yeah.
And his special effects in this were like his jumping and flying around and doing all the cool things, like. I don't know. It didn't appear they were using a stunt double because they were straight up on his face and body the whole time. Like that was not a lookalike. That was the same actor. I mean, they might have done it with the magic of Hollywood, and I'm cool with that. But like, it was very clearly him in the scenes.
Yeah, like that scene we were talking about near the beginning of the tree crashing on his car, and he's flung up into the air with his rifle, and he just grabs. I mean, I can't think of a. It's live action anime. It's just so over the top. But it's done tastefully and in a not, I don't know what the right word is. It's not believable, but It's enjoyable.
It's stylized. Yeah. It's got style.
What do you think overall of the plot, Adam?
I think I said this a little bit ago, just like that there's not a wasted minute. The movie's 3 hours long, but all 3 hours are just everything pays it forward to the overall outcome. And so, like, I think Matt even made a point of this, that it's just so, it's very tight. It's very tight, and I love how everything just kind of comes together. I don't really have anything to complain about this movie, but yeah, it's a little flashy at times, but like they established pretty early on that this is the kind of movie that you're along the ride for. And so yeah, no, I think they did a great job all around.
So for those watching, on the left is Beam and on the right is Raj with
the most perfect mustache ever.
Yes.
And it never flaps around when he's doing his superhuman flips.
Yeah. It's like, you know, Raju has his mustache. Indiana Jones has his hat.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're saying they're glued on there?
Maybe, you know.
So Raj takes his hat off when it's necessary. I didn't see Indiana Jones doing that.
That's true. But Indiana Jones didn't have as cool of a mustache. I think if he did,
it'd be too much.
He had the whip.
It's the alternate timeline when Tom Selleck actually played Indiana Jones like he was supposed to.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Did you not know that?
I did not.
Yeah, no. But he was busy doing Magnum PI, and so he couldn't do it. And so George Lucas was like, all right, Harrison, I guess you can do this one too.
Yeah, it was so we've talked about the plot. What did you guys think of the world building? I don't really have a lot to say that we haven't already. I thought it's pretty on point. I mean, they did a good job showing the world. You saw the poverty, the starvation, the tax collectors. You know, I don't care that you had a flood last year and you haven't gotten your food. You still owe me, and I'm going to kill your elder because you didn't pay me. Like, that one scene sets the whole colonial. Yeah. You know, nothing else. That scene gives you everything you need.
Well, even that, like that was somewhere in the middle, like the opening scene where they take the child and everything, they take Bali, but like the verisimilitude of like showing the village where it's like, oh yeah, people still live like this over there in certain places too. So like they know what it's like.
What about you, Adam? You got anything on the world building?
I mean, from not knowing as much as anyone else has learned, you know, in our public education system, which from my generation is substantially less than Jonathan, Matt's, and yours. I think they did a good job of encapsulating the time period. And like, from what I've seen of other like historical pieces and like even like read about it, I had no question of what time period it was. And, you know, this is 1920s India under British colonial rule. So,
Yeah, I just want to reiterate what you said earlier, JR, about their attention to detail and the continuity. Because I don't know how it actually was, but because it was consistent throughout, I can buy it. I can buy into that this is pretty close to how it was.
And it definitely was Hollywood stylized version of what, like the 1920s clothing and uniforms, and the ladies were still in long dresses, but they weren't wearing all the floofiness underneath. So like, it kind of fit with the evolving fashion. The uniform seemed period-ish to World War One from, you know, what we get from Hollywood. So I don't know if it was period accurate, but it was period consistent with what we see in popular media. So it was enough to hit the I believe button.
Yeah.
I was also impressed that they had them running out of bullets, and like you didn't see the mag that never ends. So I thought that was good. Because logistics mattered in this movie, because that was the whole theme, was if we want to fight back, we need weapons. Right.
Like,
so, I mean, that was Raj's whole quest, is to get high enough where he has access to the weapons.
Yeah. Yeah. And even when they were being silly, they were still being serious. Like when during the escape scene and Raj was holding both rifles, I think Beam, he charges both rifles for him since Raj can't. Yeah.
Working the bolt.
And Beam, for all he was, I mean, a good fighter, he had the spear, whatever. When he got to the guns, he's like, yeah, I could shoot them, or I could just pulverize them to a pulp with this giant metal stick. Let's take that option.
Yeah. And that fits his character way better. Like, he didn't magically learn how to shoot.
No, I was going to say that because he grew up in the village where it was more primitive, and they showed that from the beginning. You know? I just thought it was well done. It was consistent. And then at the end, like, you know, you helped me fulfill my promise to my father. How can I serve? Like, how can I pay you back? You could train me. Which I thought was just so cool. So, all right. So this is the movie poster, by the way. I'm going to throw some of them. There was a couple of them that came out. So this was one of them, which I thought was good. And the R's also meant Rise, Roar, and Revolt, which I guess is what the other title for it was in Hindu.
I think the joke was that like RRR doesn't actually stand for anything. Like they do Rise, Roar, and Revolt, and like the other three, the Rudram, Radam, and Rudram, are actually the actors and the director's name.
Is it really?
Yeah. So it's just kind of like, whatever R means to you.
Interesting. So this is one of the other posters. Again, the fire in the water, which, you know, was a theme. And then this is another one of them. This looks a little bit more modern. Still the fire in the water theme. I don't think this one encapsulates, because these were all official posters. I feel like this one is a glorious image. I don't think it encapsulates anything about the movie other than like two buff dudes running.
It reminds me of the movie posters for Speed, you know?
Yeah.
Or any given Mission Impossible, watching Tom Cruise run.
Yeah.
Yes.
It reminds me of...
the dance.
Oh.
Go ahead,
John. Yeah, it just reminds me of every community college graphic designer's first project.
Yes. All right. And this is, of course, the dance scene where,
love that.
They got the snazzy outfits, color coordinated, you know, fire and tan, I guess, the rock. Mm-hmm. So like that's almost in keeping with like the tan khaki from his uniform, which I thought was still symbolic.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have
also still the blue and red of water and fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just saying like their cardio was off the charts, insane for this.
Yeah.
I mean, like they could do like, you know, so you see the period stuff in the background with the, what the women are wearing. This is Jenny off to the left, on the far left. But yeah, like the clothing was kind of consistent. I thought it was well done.
I also found it really funny that the one black guy in the movie was the drummer in the jazz band or whatever that was there.
Just randomly, there's a band suddenly, and you know, we're going to bang on the drum with this silver plate.
Yeah. And he gave like the look of approval to Raju when he started using the drums. And then when Raju goes to dance, that jazz drummer is like, I got you, bro. You know,
this man has just
keeps
rhythm.
It going. Yeah.
So maybe that's how they're bridging the divide, the Rhythm Brothers. And by that, I just mean anybody that has a sense of rhythm, not because the guy was black. And then the Muscle Brothers. And together they will form a language and make a dance. By our powers uniting.
The dance off commences.
and kicking up the dust as they were doing it kind of creates that, I don't know, something about that scene was sold by the dust just kicking up at their feet.
Yeah.
So, did you guys like the posters? Did you think they worked?
I'll be honest, this is the first time I've ever seen the movie poster.
The first poster that you showed, I think, is the best for me.
This one?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that one sells it for me, too. Let me do some zooming in for you. So this is Sita in the middle, the fiance of Raj on the right with his uniform. And then we've got the more rural Beam in the left. I don't know who the guy in the middle is. Is that his dad?
That's Raj's dad, yeah.
Yep.
Beam didn't get a dad in the show. I mean, he might have one, obviously, but we didn't get to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I just like the poster. And then you see even the details of them clasping hands in the middle of this R's. Which is very Soviet style of art in that on that relief, which I just kind of like it. It's very nationalistic.
Yeah.
I mean, it works, and it's just more of that symbolism and leaning hard into it.
Yeah, consistent themes even in the random art stuff.
Yeah. Though yeah. I was that.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say I love how happy and like having fun they look in the dance picture.
It's like it looked like it was actually fun to film on top of being fun for the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I don't know. I just love it. So let's do that overall because we're running up on time. So what were your overall thoughts of this movie?
10 out of 10. We need more like it. I think we should adopt some of this like over the top silliness in America.
Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. So like 10 out of 10, but like just in retrospect on it, it feels like it leans more towards the theater aspect of it, you know, of like actual musical theater. And so being that over the top and that straightforward with all the symbolism and imagery and stuff like that is something that like people should try doing again.
Yeah, I agree. What about Adam? Did you go already, or was that John who went?
That was Jonathan. Okay. I think Tollywood should be in charge of Hollywood's action department. And bouncing off of what Matt said earlier, it was very refreshing to see something that's almost like the straight out of over the top 80s, but also like sort of like a callback to like older style like mediums where it's like I think of just first off like Mary Poppins, where like you just had the musical like dance films that were just sort of like way more prevalent back in mid 20th century. And it's kind of cool to see again like popping up in this style too. And as an action movie, no less. So I think very unique, 10 out of 10. Would love to see more.
Yeah, I generally do five-star ratings because you know that's what people are familiar with like Amazon and whatnot. So this is definitely a 5 out of 5 for me. I do recommend. I enjoyed the fight scenes. I enjoyed the romance. I enjoyed just looking at the stunning imagery of the scenery in India. If it wasn't India, it sold the versatility. Yeah, I could say that word. It sold the ambiance, right? I believed it. So it was definitely, I'd watch more by these actors. I'd watch more by this production company, Penn Studios. I'm definitely up to try more Tollywood or Bollywood. And I think I might watch it again sometime with the dubbed version instead, or with the original and then the subtitles. Cause I'm curious with the Greek chorus now. So overall I'm definitely sold. And, Nick is going to hate himself for not having had time to watch all of it.
Hey, if he watches, we're glad to come back and talk about it some more.
Yeah, or get him hooked and then want to do more like this, because this was a fun movie. Definitely worth all 3 hours.
Yep.
No complaints.
Mm-hmm. Now go watch Bahubali.
What's that?
It's the other movie by this studio. It's the one with the bamboo tree and the launching and all that stuff that you're talking about.
Oh, I've seen those on all the little clip shows and stuff. That's what they made that?
Yeah.
I think so. And there was a scene where a bunch of S.H.I.E.L.D. They group up and then they get launched out of a catapult.
Right, and like they roll in a barrel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Bahubali is part 2, I think.
Okay, now I definitely have to watch all 6 hours of it. Yeah. Who needs to write? We can watch Bollywood. Yeah. Speaking of, I will say that I am perfectly okay with sending Hollywood to India and stealing Tollywood and Bollywood and bringing it here so we can have great movies again. This is awesome. And then I'm picturing like some of our modern Hollywood actors that don't know how to do anything but dance around in front of a green screen, like making them do this kind of special effects and actual like acting. It'll be comical to watch them try.
Okay, now the scene is a dance-off. Like, oh, no.
All the classically trained triple threats could probably keep up.
I just looked at it. Apparently, there's a Bahubali 3.
What?
My mind is blown.
We need
I still haven't seen the first two, so.
It's like Indian Lord of the Rings. We got to watch. We got to have a marathon.
Absolutely. Grab your popcorn and go. So before we wrap this up and I ask everybody where they can be found on the internet for those that want to stalk you and check out your podcast – so what is your snack of preference for watching a movie? Jonathan.
You know, I'm a big fan of just straight up buttery popcorn.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Classics. What about you, Adam?
Reese's Pieces.
Bold choice. Okay. And Matt?
Whenever I go to the theater and actually go see a movie, I will always buy a Coca-Cola slushie.
Nice. I'm a fan of, well, I don't go to theaters because they just annoy me. So I watch them at home, but I'm still popcorn, although I do kettle corn because good kettle corn, that's sweet and savory. So good. As far as beverages, I don't really have a like consistent. Sometimes it's Diet Coke because I think it tastes better than regular Coke, less sweet. And most of the time I'm just drinking water. I'm boring like that. Maybe if I hydrate enough, I could bleed like all of my body's blood and still be okay. I've got water to back me up and I could like survive like Bean did.
Yep. Always got to stay hydrated.
I bet they were wearing their PT belts underneath those outfits. I bet that was the secret, Matt.
Yep. Always just, you got to glow in the dark other than in the daytime and whatever, wherever you are, it'll keep you safe.
Yeah, absolutely. It's science. Stop bullets. Oh, speaking of bullets, that scene at the end where like Raj is repeating back the they're not worth a bullet, like the value of a bullet. And he's like, let's give it back to him through his heart. Like that scene was just so perfect. Oh, my God. That was amazing.
It's funny because like you saw it coming a mile away. Like he said the speech like three or four times already. It has to be
So the dad said it. The young governor said it. Presumably that was him when he was younger. It looked like it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then he said it when he killed the mom beat the mom to take Molly. He said it again when they like bludgeoned the elk. Like there's just so many times it was said. Mm-hmm. I think I can remember at least four. Like that was the point. In the army, we just say give them a dollar's worth. But apparently they didn't have the dollar, so they had to go old school. Naval style.
They couldn't afford it.
I mean, you got to do what you got to do on a budget. So how can everybody – well, obviously we're going to link to the podcast because you don't have a clean link for the podcast yet. You're working on that as you get more followers. So I'm going to link to all of the gobbledygook that is the Yet Another Writing Podcast. But Jonathan, how can they find you as an individual writer, not the podcast?
Look me up on the Amazon Authors, Jonathan Watson. So far, I've got a small catalog of one story so far, but more to come. Oh, am I?
Yeah. No, you're good. And, you're good.
Yeah.
All right. What about you, Adam?
You can find me on my Linktree, linktr.ee/AM Stevens. And that has links to my Facebook, Instagram, and Amazon as well. And as well as a link to our podcast.
Outstanding. And finally, last but not least, we got Mr. Matt Ullerant. I'm going to try to say it all fancy-like.
Sure. Thanks. Appreciate it. And you can find me on my Amazon author page, amazon.com/author/ Kilroy Higgins, KILROYHIGGINS. It's named after one of the characters from a book, which I'm shopping around right now.
Oh, I thought Kilroy was here. I thought you were going all World War II.
That too, actually. I made that name in the 7th grade, but hey, stick it to it since. You can probably find me searching for that name on the internet. It's actually more than my regular name.
If it's scratched in any porta-potties in the Army, we're going to have a talk. All right. You can find us on our Linktree, linktr.ee, linktree/Blasters and Blades Podcast. Again, linktree/Blasters and Blades Podcast, where we link to all the things, the bit shoots, the rumbles, the YouTubes, the TikToks. I forgot Stabby made a TikTok. Almost surprised myself. Our Twitter, our email, blastersandbladespodcast@gmail.com for official purposes only. Again, blastersandbladespodcast@gmail.com. We link to our Facebook group and our Facebook page, and more importantly, Stabby Stab's Instagram, Twitter, and email, where you can send all of your hate and discontent, and she's going to make you cry. We want the fan mail. She wants the fan mail. She's bored, okay? She's a housewife, right? She wants you to talk to her. We have our website at anchor.fm/blasterstackandtechblades. Again, anchor.fm/blasterstackandtechblades, where for as little as 99 cents a month, you can help keep the lights on. These shows are not free to produce, so we appreciate your patronage. And you can also support the show more directly at buymeacoffee.com/authorJR Handley. Again, buymeacoffee.com/authorJR Handley. Be sure to put in the comment section that it's for the podcast. And I promise I will keep my co-hosts duly caffeinated. They will drink until they run out of coffee brand coffee, and then we'll buy some more with your donations. So, yeah, you're keeping us hydrated. I mean, caffeinated, whatever, right? It's Java, people. Use the code PODCASTGRUNTS in the link below and you get 10% off. It's made in America, roasted in America anyway, and shipped and packaged by an American company, which, you know, if that matters to you, that's a thing since most of our listening audience is in the continental U.S. With that being said, thank you guys for coming on.
Yeah.
And thank you, dear listener, for spending some of your precious time with us. For my absentee co-host, I am J.R. Handley, and this was the Blasters and Blades podcast. We'll be back next week at the same time, where we'll indulge our love of nerd culture, cheesy jokes, and all things that go boom.